Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 1st of March, 2021. Had an interesting close to the month on Friday, to say the least. We saw some relief coming into the U.S. Treasury market in a pretty big way, pretty well bid across the board, especially at the longer end of the curve, a big reversal of what we saw on Thursday with that crazy volatility. I have a chart on the U.S. stuff a little bit further down, but in today's slide deck, you can find the link with today's podcast description. You can see the 10-year bond overnight in Australia really getting a strong bounce there, and a story that the RBA is out to prevent these yields from spiking too quickly higher, and they're doubling their allocation of purchases at the longer end of the curve from their normal 2 billion Aussie to 4 billion Aussie. This, I think, is part of what is feeding a mood and a general sense you're seeing elsewhere that this was just an aberration. We can all swoop back into this market. The central banks have our back. Let's go. Let's go equities. Let's go stocks. I'm not so sure we're fully on board with that, especially in my area, FX, where we've seen some pretty dramatic moves. And then just to remind everyone where we've come from on slide three, that U.S. 7-year treasury, you saw the enormous spike on Thursday. We're talking, you know, multi-sigma moves here related to normal volatility amounts. For the yield spike. Yes, we sort of retraced some of that back on Friday. I imagine some of the end of month rebalancing, given where things would have been in terms of portfolio balances after a very weak month, to say the least, for U.S. Treasuries. And you can see on the lower right that March 23 Eurodollar future, which sort of is a gauge for pricing and what the market expects the Fed to do, seeing a similar a bounce of similar magnitude. That's the price versus the yield. So I guess the narrative is, Peter, we have the NASDAQ back up 200 plus points from Friday's close. We managed to avoid that test below support. You can see it on slide five, the NASDAQ 100. It's all happy days. Let's get back to the central bank put, celebrating that punch bowl and so on. What are your thoughts, Peter? I suspect folks can hear my cynicism to a slight degree this morning.
Well, I tend to be slightly more positive than the normal guy, and probably also our overall team. But that's because I'm just an equity guy. But I think what happened last week was definitely justified, and I still think we're in for a big unknown week. I mean, I think it could still be quite shaky. There's a lot of compressed volatility in the system that could be let loose on the right catalyst. I've put in the small insert on the different themes that we're tracking. And to me, it was a big disappointment that, you know, last on Friday, you actually had bubble stocks and next gen medicine stocks up. So that's sort of that was the get go or the rebound trade in the ARK Innovation Fund, basically, or the across all the ARK Invest funds. But we'll talk about that later in today's podcast. But if you look at the months to date, which is not March, despite it is March, it's the February numbers, you can see it was a big month for commodities. The commodity sector was up 11%. Bubble stocks only down minus 2.2%. And I think this is the key segment for me that I will be constantly watching, because it's the most directly linked to what's taking place in the fixed income market, but also I think the best parameter on the frothiness. Next energy, medicine, and green transformation stocks are also down, but I think the bubble stocks, those are the really ones. If that lets go, I think it can easily change. And I will say that, John, I mean, yes, we are up 1.6% in the NASDAQ futures, but the intraday trading ranges last week was as high as 4.3% in the NASDAQ. So, I mean, we could be down by the end of this day. I honestly believe that the underlying fragility is pretty high at this point in time.
Yeah, and I should add, one of the things probably or most likely adding to some degree of sentiment boost is the $1.9 trillion stimulus passed by the U.S. House. The Senate parliamentarian has stripped the ability to have this bill voted on by simple majority. This minimum wage aspect is very complicated, all this stuff. But basically, Senate votes on bills can only go through with a simple majority if it's related strictly to spending measures. And they decided that this minimum wage does not classify or qualify for that. So they cannot do a simple 50-50 vote with the minimum wage part included in that stimulus. So that will be likely stripped, but they're not going to be voting on this, the Senate, until next week. And then March 14th is when some of these benefits run out. So Congress needs to get busy, but of course, some sort of stimulus, and a very large one, will pass through. Now, I meant to, and I want to get to you, but I'm going to do a little segue here by looking at what happened in the FX space. You talked about Australia overnight, but Australia has been sort of the, within the G7 currencies, let's call it, the really high beta currency. And within G10, Aussie and NOK, probably, I have to add Kiwi as well, but the highest beta currencies to the big boom in commodities and the weaker dollar. And we saw both last week a tremendous further run up and then the huge correction. I mean, we traded over 80 on Thursday before correcting all the way to 77 on Friday. And part of that is that we're finally seeing a bit of TUI action in commodities. Not that impressive yet, but it's finally showing some signs of at least being able to trade both ways. What's your latest on the commodity space, I suppose, wherever you want to start that conversation?
Indeed, John, and I think there's two key things for this week. I think if we just look at the whole move we had in bond markets last week and the impact on stocks and commodities, I think that the gold market will probably it's very interesting to follow because of the potential signal it could send to us. Because last week we were focusing on that key support level at the 1760 to 65 area. We crashed through that on Friday. Had a relatively weak close, but today we are seeing the market bounce with the general risk sentiment coming back. But I think what is also important is the fact that the real yield, which touched negative 55 basis points at its peak last week, is back to a negative 75 basis points. And I think it's also just the question you saw. You mentioned Australia and the RBA's potential interest in keeping or trying to keep yields down. If we see continued increased focus on yield curve control in the US, that could, as we have mentioned in the past, be a major catalyst for gold to move higher, because we still see a thing that inflation is not being properly reported in the numbers. We see that pick up over the coming months, with the yield curve control in place, then obviously real yields can really only go one way, and that's deeper into negative territory. So we'll keep a close eye on that 1760 to 65 area today. And also on the oil market, I think another key week there, because we've had a phenomenal run now since early November, basically when vaccine news hit the wires and we got President Biden, Biden elected as the US president. We've been on a tear since, magnified by the unilateral production cut back in January by Saudi Arabia. On Thursday this week, OPEC Plus will meet to decide what to do with production. And there's two things that they will look at: whether they will add another 50, half a million barrels, which they have agreed to last year as part of the accord, and also whether Saudi Arabia will abandon its unilateral cut of 1 million barrels. So clearly the question is, do the cartel want higher oil prices still, or do they want to create some kind of stability in order also not to to create too much turmoil in the market from the rising inflation pressure that's coming through for higher oil prices? So Thursday is really going to be the key this week. I think Saudi Arabia will do their utmost to support the price. So weakness is probably, we don't see much weakness in it at this point. Just keep in mind, though, I'll put in the slide there on slide 9, the insert about the speculative position. It's currently at the highest since the middle of 2018. So obviously plenty of longs in the market right now.
High stakes for the oil market. And we're talking about the fact that the focus has been so much on the Fed, but we have suddenly Australia cropping up with its intent to keep yields suppressed. You'd think that would be not celebrated in terms of Aussie strength, obviously, if they're waiting their buying to the longer and keeping the yields suppressed there. Of course, if commodities continue to go amok, that's going to be hard for the Australian central bank to fight against that. But in Europe as well, I think there's been some more success in impressing the market with their concern about yields, especially when they're already so, or especially when they're still so very low. And we saw that late last week with the ECB's Schnabel mentioning that. Well, now it's time for the ECB to put its money where its mouth is, if you will. And we're going to get the latest. I don't have a time for this, but we're looking out for it today. The latest weekly bond buying numbers from the ECB. I think signs that they're upping their purchases dramatically could continue to weigh on the euro, and it's seen quite a technical correction. So despite U.S. yields coming in a lot back, sharply back lower, we saw the euro dollar sharply lower as well. On slide seven, that break above the 121.90 area really smashed back lower. This time, though, this sharp correction, we've seen it a couple times before, is being accompanied by a little bit broader dollar strength. You still need to see 120 taken out there, though, I think, to argue that we're the bulls need to give up for a while, and we're going to be back into a range between 116 and 119. Okay, Peter, back to you with this arc. There was a couple of news items over the weekend. I don't know how you want to address this. This business about there's some copycat, I don't know if it's called copycat, but copy funds that are they're copying ARK investment style, which could mean that the risk in the space is even bigger than simply the ARK fund itself. I don't know if you want to, that's where you want to pick up the conversation on ARK as well.
Well, there was a lot of things that took place over the weekend or heading into the weekend. First of all, it was probably one of the worst weeks for ARK Invest. I mean, several days of outflows across all their funds, you know, all the talks and jitter. we were adding to that, of course, with our analysis. And, slide six, I've put in the link on the piece we did on Friday. We sort of updated our positions. And I think that's the key seal of ARK Invest. They, as you can see on that table, you have all the top holdings where they, I mean, you have 20 stocks, there, I think, almost with where they own more than 10% of the underlying outstanding shares. And some of these companies are quite illiquid. I saw some people making, liquidity analysis that, as you said, I mean, they have been paid by Nikko in Japan to mimic their trades and selling in Japan. So there's a lot of investors in Japan that are basically copying or having the same exposures. And then this guy on Twitter, Motorhead, that I'm putting into the small insert you can see there, he also refers to that Sumitomo Mitsui also have a lot of the same position in their investment company. And you and I talked about, John, I don't know whether we brought it into the podcast, but Cathie Wood is being called the Golden Queen or something like that in South Korea. There's a lot of people there that are also big fan of Cathie Wood, the founder of ARK Invest, and basically mimicking her shares. And I think it's a little bit of a controversy here, because she came from the mutual fund industry, and she's put out these tremendously successful funds, but it's an active fund with concentrated positions, but in an ETF structure. And by the nature of the ETFs, you have daily transparency on all your positions. So people can basically almost in real time, not in real time because it's not intraday, but you can sort of guess what she's doing and you can see all the position. And that it's very dangerous when the flows suddenly reverses. And coming back to the liquidity point, what has been pointed out is that you cannot only look at her positions, because so many other people are following her that it is very crowded. And I saw someone make some calculations that it could take up to 30 days to liquidate some of her positions. And she did the exact opposite of what people typically do in a crisis. She increased her liquid holdings in Tesla and others, and not try to slim down her illiquid positions. And that, I think, underscores that she's in a very tough position. And we know this is exactly what often went wrong for that very famous mutual fund in UK not so long time ago, that when they were hit by redemptions, there was the illiquid positions that actually killed the fund, so to speak. And also the same with long-term capital management back in 1998. It's always when you have the liquidity event and you're stuck in these positions and you're the big whale, you cannot get out. So I bet, given where NASDAQ is today, I think ARK probably is up 2% in pre-market when we get the first print in a couple of hours. But I think it's still going to be a very exciting week. And because she doubled down on Tesla, there is a lot of exposure to Bitcoin and Tesla, and Square also bought Bitcoin. So it's not over yet.
Sorry. I like the regulatory, or I like the angle that was raised about Tesla within their investment in Bitcoin. Here's a company that only has a profit because of subsidies, because supposedly because Tesla is making green cars, and then they're buying Bitcoin, which is not a very green technology, to say the least, and the CO2 releases from that. So that's an interesting angle. I wonder if that could spook investors if some regulatory scrutiny creeps in on that one. There's just a random thought there, but I think it's gotten a lot of attention, positive attention on our website. The various baskets you've done a green transformation basket, a number of the baskets of stocks where people can find inspiration on various themes. And on slide 11, you've got quite a table here of a new basket, a gaming basket. Unfortunately, much of the world is very, I say unfortunately, very into the gaming. It's a very popular industry. So what's take us through that?
Yeah, so we launched our sixth equity theme basket, and more will come this year. I think the next one we are planning is the one on travel and airliners, so basically leisure activity and hotels. That's something we're working on. But we launched this gaming basket. You can see it on slide 11. It has been a very powerful trend over the past 5 years, as you can see on the small performance chart. Not that it's any indication of future performance. There's a little bit of survivorship bias when we pick the largest cap companies in this theme, but I think the geographical diversification here is quite good. It's also we also have pure mobile game companies, but also the ones that are more in video and console games, graphic cards, esports streaming platforms, etc. It's a pretty diverse table here, and as you can see. Yeah, and if you look at the sales growth, it was almost 40% last year. But what's interesting about gaming, the gaming industry, is that compared to e-commerce and other high-growth industries, the gaming industry is extremely profitable. Most of the companies are very profitable, and they have growing free cash flows. So, but the key risk that we are highlighting, obviously, is hangover here in 2021 when we normalize the economy. I think a lot of young people will get out and actually socialize in the physical world. So there could be some headwind for the foreseeable future here, short-term at least for the gaming industry. And then, secondly, regulatory scrutiny of the industry. So in 2019, in November, there was a big hit to Tencent back in the days in China, because the Chinese government introduced caps on how many hours of play young people under 15, I think, could play in China. And I actually think that it's a very sensible policy to actually conduct, because it's the gaming industry have learned from the social media industry how to create positive feedback loops that get you hooked. They call it engagement, but I will call it addiction. And I think addiction in not a very mature brain, which is what you have in children, is best regulated by helping the brain, cut through that, a positive feedback loop. So I think actually what China did, I think, will be an inspiration, and I think will propel similar regulation in Europe and the US over time. So that's obviously also a key risk to consider if you want to invest in this theme.
Yeah, and then you've got another week, big batch of earnings reports coming up. Take us through what you think is going to get market focused this week.
Yeah, so it's... I'm actually laughing because it's the third time we have Mercado Libre up on the slide. I mean, it's now they are scheduled to report today, and I really hope they do, because I'm getting very cynical here and critical and a little bit spooked, to say the least. I mean, they have postponing it for three times now, and as I've said before, their investor relationship side looks very terrible. So I don't hope anything is wrong with this company. I certainly don't hope so. But also today we have Zoom Video. Interesting to see their their outlook. Well, we're still in lockdown, so I guess they have done pretty well. And then NIO, I think, is a good barometer on electrical vehicles in China. C Limited tomorrow. It's the fastest growing gaming and e-commerce site in Southeast Asia. And we'll be following that closely also, because I think it's on our bubble stocks basket. And then on Wednesday, we have Peugeot in France. I think always important for sort of getting an idea of where France is. There's still a lot of local production there. And then Snowflake, again, one of those bubbly stocks, which are very hot IPO recently. So we'll be closing in on these names in red there.
Okay, and on the macro calendar, it's heating up a bit this week. We have the world manufacturing PMIs and refreshes of preliminary PMIs today, and we saw overnight that China, the official PMI, coming in at only 50.6 on the manufacturing side. They also reported their services overnight, and that was at 51.4. These are not impressive figures, below expectations, below the prior month. I mean, that manufacturing sector barely expanding. It's a bit curious when they're on fire in other places, at least in the U.S., and there's all this talk of shipping container shortages, et cetera. The Caixin measure also quite low at 50.9 overnight, a slight drop from the prior month. So we'll watch for that. And then we have Fed speakers all week, so we'll get it. I think one of the key things to watch will be any sense of whether there's a pattern developing in what Fed speakers are saying this week, that they were a little bit maybe unsettled by last week's volatility in the treasury market. We had, let's recall, Tuesday and Wednesday last week, we had the Fed Chair Powell out speaking before Congress, testifying. And his comment on yields was simply that, yes, they're rising, and they're rising because optimism is rising, and that's all fine and dandy. not his words, fine and dandy, but that was the essence of what he said. And then it was the one day after, on Thursday, that we saw the tantrum thrown in markets there. So has the Fed made a bit of a policy mistake in sending that signal out? Do they realize it? Do we see a pattern of a response to that? So that's what I'll look for. I'm not saying we will, but that's what we'll look for all week. We've got today already the Fed's Williams of the New York Fed, and therefore vice chair, out speaking today. Brainerd of the deputy governors as well. So watch for that. And then watch for the Australian RBA out overnight. It's going to be a very interesting meeting. After all, they've just taken these steps to try to tamp down bond yields. How seriously are they taking this? How seriously as well are they taking the massive spike? Albeit, yes, we just saw quite a sell-off in Aussie, but the very steep spike in Australian dollar before that, they've already sort of picked up their concern on the currency level as well. So it could be interesting to see if we get a follow-on selling, if they're exceptionally dovish there. And then we'll preview the rest of the week. We'll talk about as they roll in. Of course, we have Friday, we have the U.S. jobs report, and we have the budget, the U.K. spring budget, with new tax announcements on the way on Wednesday. For now, we're going to call it a day, and we'll see how things stand, if this good mood is able to sort of extend, or whether it's a little bit of a false dawn this early in the process. And we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.